The Republican press has taken a new line of attack in this campaign. Having failed to meet the Democratic program on the basis of issues, they now accuse those of us who oppose the Republican candidate and the Republican Party of trying to destroy General Eisenhower's reputation. An example of this line of attack is a recent editorial in the Minneapolis press. Once they say, we spoke well of the general. Now they say, we speak only to destroy him. General Eisenhower is one person. Candidate Eisenhower is another. The general has a distinguished record, one that commands respect and honor from Republicans and Democrats alike. It is true that many of us welcome General Eisenhower's nomination on the Republican ticket. Thousands of Americans cherish the hope that he would be a force for something new, something enlightened and progressive in the Republican Party. We had reason to hope for this in light of the bitter opposition to General Eisenhower's candidacy prior to and during the Republican convention by the reactionary elements of the Republican Party. It now turns out that we were wrong. The Republican convention nominated Dwight D. Eisenhower on the one hand and adopted the Republican platform on the other. But behind this platform and candidate stands the Republican organization. It is the dominating and motivating force in the Republican campaign. It is the Republican Party of Senator Taft. It is the Republican Party of Governor Dewey. It is the Republican Party of obstruction and opposition to every social gain of the past 20 years. You don't rebuild a house by putting on a new front porch. Dwight D. Eisenhower is the candidate of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is today what it was yesterday. It has not changed, and candidate Eisenhower has not changed it. The sad truth is that the Republican Party has changed General Eisenhower. No sooner had he become the Republican candidate than he tried to out-Republican Mr. Republican himself. His attacks upon the program and accomplishments of recent Democratic administrations have been excessive and in bad taste. They have exaggerated faults and ridiculed great achievements. His attacks, especially on our foreign policy, have not only been unjustified, but also contrary to the position that he formerly held. Nor has Dwight Eisenhower refrained from what amounts to personal attacks on the integrity and the honesty of the President of the United States, attacks against the very man to whom he himself owes so much. Before the general became the Republican candidate, he spoke of President Truman in these terms: the world needs leadership now more than anything else. We've got a great leader in this country, a man from the Midwest, and a man with a whale of a lot of common sense. That's what General Eisenhower said of the President of the United States. Now, however, under the influence of Republican partisan advisors, he chooses to speak differently. Disappointment in General Eisenhower is not only to be found in the Democratic Party. It is to be found among thousands and tens of thousands of independents and liberal Republicans. The ranks of the Volunteers for Stevenson, an organization composed of political independents and people of all parties, are filled with people who once looked favorably upon the general. Indeed, the man who is now the chairman of the Minnesota Volunteers for Stevenson publicly admits to having voted for the general in the Minnesota presidential primary. Every day, newspapers like the New York Times report new support for Governor Stevenson from among prominent citizens who had once declared for Eisenhower. Senator Wayne Morris, Republican from Oregon, who was once one of Eisenhower's strongest supporters, has now refused to campaign in his behalf. The few others, like Senator Morris, who assisted the general in his efforts to win the nomination, are now pushed into the background. They campaign in his behalf only feebly, for they know their cause is betrayed and that the Republican Party will remain for some time to come a party still infiltrated with isolationism, a party still without a program, without imagination, and without promise. General Eisenhower does not lead the Republican Party. The Republican political machine leads candidate Eisenhower. Recently, Senator Taft, in a speech at Columbus, Ohio, had this to say, and I quote the senator, "I have talked to General Eisenhower. I know that he believes in the basic principles that I believe in. I'm glad to assure you that if Ike is elected, we will have the kind of Republican administration in which I believe." End of quote. There you have it, fellow citizens. This is the same Senator Taft who voted against the North Atlantic Pact and the program which General Eisenhower commanded. This is the same Senator Taft who dominates the Republican policies of Congress, policies which the people of this great country have repudiated for 20 years. But it is not only Senator Taft who embraces the Republican candidate. In the Republican Party, there is a powerful group of rigid, truculent enemies of the public welfare who make up the Republican wing of the Congress. Have you had an opportunity from the Republican press to learn of the significance and the policies of such names as Senators Capehart and Jenner of Indiana, Kem of Missouri, Nixon of California, Ecton of Montana, Senator Kane of Washington, Senator Welker of Idaho, Bricker of Ohio, Butler of Maryland, Hickenlooper of Iowa, Dirksen of Illinois, McCarthy of Wisconsin, Watkins of Utah, Malone of Nevada, and many, many more. These are some of the Republican leaders in the Congress. It is their philosophy which dominates and controls the Republican Party. These men and many of their colleagues have opposed almost without exception whatever is compassionate, whatever has been necessary for the general welfare of the American people. These men of the Republican Party have almost without exception opposed every effort to build an effective security system against Soviet communistic imperialism. They have resisted measure after measure to assist the peoples of Europe and Asia so that they might achieve stability and strength to resist the fearful spread of communism. These are the Republican Party. It is these men and others like them who control the Republican Party. They and the powerful interests of special privilege and wealth that stand today behind the Republican Party. They are what you vote for if you put a Republican in the White House and if you return such Republicans to Congress and your state governments. But you may ask, isn't the general different? Isn't it possible that he could remake the party? Many people had once hoped so, but the tragic fact is that these Republicans seem to have remade the general, and not he them. Since receiving the nomination, he has talked more and more like them. He is supporting all of them that are now running for re-election. Frankly, he has placed party interest and regularity above principle and national program. If now, when he is only a candidate, he is unable or unwilling to stand up against these men, what reason is there to hope that he might resist them if and when he becomes president? Now, the American people did not have a great deal of information about the general's political views before he became the Republican candidate. Many hoped that he might identify himself with the constructive and humanitarian causes of the nation, with the interests of the great mass of the people, with policies that were forward-looking and enlightened. But speech by speech, week after week, this hope has faded away. First, it was his stand on the Tidelands oil issue, which in substance would give to the privileged few vast natural resources which rightfully belong to the many. Then it was public power, where private interests were to be served at the expense of the general welfare. His discussions of labor legislation, of civil rights for minorities, and other such important matters have been evasive, and all too often just plain wrong. His words were the words of the right wing of the Republican Party, His policies were indeed the policies of the Taft wing of the Republican Party. But most distressing of all is the manner in which the Republican candidate has dealt with the grave issues of our foreign policy. Now let the record be straight. General Eisenhower contributed to those decisions of foreign policy. Candidate Eisenhower may attack those decisions, but the general of NATO, the general who was the chief of staff of the armed forces of the United States, the general that was the advisor to President Truman and Franklin Roosevelt, he was an integral part of those basic foreign policy decisions. We cannot excuse these recent utterances as mere campaign talk, for they parallel too closely the sentiments of the reckless men whom he has recently embraced and who unfortunately have embraced him in the Republican Party. Millions of Americans had hoped that with a Democratic candidate of such dignity and intelligence as Governor Adlai Stevenson, this campaign would assume a level of great seriousness and political honesty. Millions of Americans looked forward to a campaign that would give all of us the opportunity to learn about our government, to study the issues carefully, and to make our choice after careful reflection and deliberation. The Republican candidate and his political partisans have made this impossible. He has done so by permitting himself to follow the practices and the political strategy of those who preceded him on the Republican ticket. Practices and policies, by the way, which have led the Republican Party to 5 successive disastrous defeats. Now, one final note. Many of those who once had hopes for the general have left him out of disappointment. But a great many have also left him because they find his opponent, Governor Stevenson, a man of such extraordinary quality that they have already begun to think of him as a second Abraham Lincoln. Governor Stevenson is a man of the highest intelligence, indeed of brilliance, of compassion, and of human sympathy, a man who will champion great human causes. This is a man of the most remarkable common sense and practicality, but a man at the same time of the highest vision. He embodies in his personality and in his mind whatever is of the finest in the liberal spirit, whatever is finest in the democratic life and in Western tradition. He is a man of the broadest experience in government and in foreign affairs. Governor Stevenson is a man of courage, who says what he believes and who talks just plain common sense to the American people, and who speaks the only way he knows how, honestly and maturely. Yes, Governor Stevenson is a great man with a forward-looking constructive program. He symbolizes today the lofty idealism and the intellectual qualities of the great Woodrow Wilson, plus the compassion, the understanding, and the humanitarianism of Franklin Roosevelt. It is to Governor Stevenson that the American people will turn for leadership, for progress in the days to come.